Hello and welcome to a bonus edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tonight, we are doing the Georgia pregame interview show. So we were fortunate enough to get a couple of guys from the Waiting Since Last Saturday Georgia podcast. And they are an independent crew, much like us at the Alabama Football Podcast. They started in 2015. There's three of them, and they just have a roundtable discussion. They're pretty funny, really nice guys. And so we spent about 20 to 30 minutes talking about the Georgia game. It's interesting to sort of get inside the Georgia mindset for this game. And I think you guys will enjoy. So give it a listen. Hey, at the end, I just let the audio run so you get sort of the raw, wrap up and conversation at the end. So the audio just will run out. But again, very good conversation with those guys, and we certainly hope that you'll enjoy it. Leave us some feedback. Give us your thoughts on this podcast. And if you're part of the All-American crew, we look forward to seeing you at the Zoom call Thursday night. If you're not part of the All-America crew, it's not too late to upgrade, and we'll hope you join us drink in hand Thursday night, 8 o'clock. Talk to everyone later. Roll Tide. Hey, guys, have we got a treat for you. We've got the whole crew, Scott, Will, and Tony from Waiting Since Last Saturday, probably one of the best college football podcast names going. Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Going well. We're gathered here. This is Scott speaking. We're gathered here on my back porch, which is our COVID protocol. But it's actually turned into something that we really enjoy because we get the nice early fall evenings. We get the crickets, and we've gotten a lot of comments about that from our listeners. But it's game week. It's Alabama week, and it's Tuesday evening. And so we're going to be, after we speak with you, we're going to be breaking down from the Georgia side on what we think is going to happen in this this pending matchup of 2 versus 3.
Yeah, we had to do your show first because we're going to start it out to be nice. And then when we're done taping review, when we just do our regular Georgia show, we're going to say all the bad stuff we're holding off for this show.
So, all right. So, listeners, you got to tune into this, and then you got to hear them for the sort of the other side, the commentary, sort of the after party commentary.
All IPs from Alabama are blocked.
Very good. Very good. Hey, I want to start us off with a little bit of gratitude, right? You guys have started off the season 3-0, and you've knocked off Auburn and Tennessee. There may not at times be a lot that Georgia and Alabama can agree on, but that's certainly one thing, right?
Well, I mean, this is Tony. Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking that very thing Sunday. I was like, man, Alabama, we kind of run their run the gambit of their hate outside of, you know, maybe beating LSU. The one thing I'll say is I'll be disappointed if y'all don't work in some nine finger jokes on the mazes. That's kind of been a running theme with us. But the one thing I'll say about it is I do appreciate that. I do appreciate you recognizing that, just because, you know, for at least for our listeners, a lot of us view, a lot of Georgia fans view Alabama fans as not recognizing pretty much anything other than things that are outside of the T-Town sphere. And the fact that you recognize that immediately, it heartened me, because I think I'm always here for beating Tennessee and Auburn too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, let's jump right in and give us sort of the pulse of the Georgia fans coming into this game. It's the number one defense versus the number one offense. If this were a couple of weeks later, it's still kind of early in the season. A couple of weeks later, we might call this the sort of this year's game of the century. It's also the first trip to Tuscaloosa for you guys in 13 years, which is really hard to believe. We've played with postseason games. It seems like we've played a lot more regularly to think that this is 13 years, you guys back in Tuscaloosa. This damn COVID, I was looking forward to quite the scene in Tuscaloosa, but it'll be sort of tamped down. But talk about the sort of the pulse of the nation, if you will, across Dog Nation coming into this contest.
Yeah, we were going to come to that game, actually. So, yeah, we're kind of bummed out about that, too. Right. Is this the first game since the Britney Spears game, since the one where the
first time in Alabama?
In Alabama, since they've been to the inexplicably on the final drive started referring to Britney Spears. When, right. Very amusing. It's funny. I was just talking to Tony before as we were walking up here. One of the strange things about Georgia-Alabama happening now and earlier happening in the middle of COVID, happening when we're still not exactly clear how the playoffs going to turn out is, you know, these games are always, as you said, the games of the century. It's always Georgia and it's always Alabama. This year, it's obviously still a huge game. They're number 2 and 3 in the country. It feels like another game week, which I think is obviously different. You know, we've joked about this podcast that no one can ever go back and listen to our preview podcast for the game, the rain game between Alabama and Georgia, because two of the three of us picked Georgia to win that game dramatically. and it did not turn out that way. And it really, you know, that game, don't tell you that changed really the trajectory of Georgia football, and I think has led them to kind of this point. But so Alabama has always been kind of the signpost for Georgia. You know, clearly Kirby Smart comes in here as someone who's not just someone that went to Georgia and has the history of Georgia, but he's known and from the Saban tree, but even like the idea that he was meant to build Georgia in the model of Alabama, and I think has been considerably more successful than other people that have tried that have been from Saban. So clearly Alabama not only has been a rival and obviously has put Georgia two very difficult losses for Georgia the last two times they've seen them, that Alabama's, you guys are so good, you're the goal, right? And so they're always going to kind of be the measuring stick. What's interesting about this year is they feel more like equals. I think Alabama is favored, and I think with good reason, but the idea that like Georgia needs everything to fall right, or is Georgia there, I think there's an understanding that Georgia is there. Now that doesn't mean they're going to win this game or that they are even as deep and talented as Alabama is, but they are closer now. And to me, looking at that game in 15, the blowout game, that was the clear moment for Mark Richt. That was really much the end of it for Mark Richt in Georgia. Not so much because people didn't like Richt. It was just, you looked at that game and thought, oh, Alabama is doing something different than Georgia is. And if Georgia continues doing what it's doing, it's never going to catch up. And so Georgia adjusted, they brought in Kirby Smart, and now they've been built kind of in that model. It's clear to Georgia fans, I think to the country, Georgia has gotten closer. Now, I think one thing that I think also takes a little bit of shine off this game, it's very possible, particularly the way the SEC has gone so far, these teams are probably going to meet in the SEC championship game again. So, you know, it feels like the stakes are a little bit lower because of that, because if Alabama wins this game, Georgia's going to get almost certainly going to get another shot at them in the SEC championship game and vice versa.
Yeah, I agree.
So, let me just add one little thing to that. Will just spoke to the rational Georgia fan. I'll speak to the irrational Georgia fan. You know, much in the way Alabama has Eli Gold or even Bear Bryant in the attitude of winning, Georgia has Larry Munson, which makes us eternal pessimists. So in a lot of ways, this game is the Schrodinger's matchup for us. Alabama hadn't played anybody, and their offense was great, their defense sucks, and we're still going to lose by 20. So, I mean, you know, it's a very interesting place. I've heard that for almost a quote line, that line as a quote from more than one person, that, well, Alabama's defense ain't played nobody, they look bad and all these things. I'm like, oh, we're still going to lose by 3 touchdowns. It's Alabama.
Yeah. And I guess my take on it is the thing I've been telling my boys. I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old boy who are rabid Georgia fans. And I've been saying to them, is like, look, y'all have never witnessed a loss in Tuscaloosa in your lifetime. You know, I'm trying to build it up that way, looking at the positive, even though the Georgia's lost, I think, 5 in a row in the series. Back in 2002, when Francione was coach for Bama, that was Billy Bennett field goal time and Fred Gibson. And then in 07 was the one and done with Matthew Stafford to Mikey Henderson. And that was Saban's first year, 2000 Saban, I think is what I remember them calling it. And they finished 7-6 with a win over Colorado and the Liberty Bowl, I think that your Independence Bowl that year. So this is framed differently in two minds for me, where I'm looking at the winning streak that Georgia has, trying to build myself up in Tuscaloosa. But then the other side of me realizes all the recent pain and hurt that I've been dealing with when I feel like that we're equals or trying to catch up to Alabama. And you know, if we're ahead in the fourth quarter, I'm not going to feel very comfortable about that, because that's how the last two games have gone.
Right. Well, I think we're more equals as programs. And I think we have, you guys have fans, we have fans that would consider that an insult. I consider that, you know, pretty high praise. Right. But I think there are some on our side that have the mentality that, you know, if lowly Ole Miss can take us to the ropes, what the heck is Georgia going to do to us? I don't think that's a fair comparison, right? Because the matchups are completely different. But, you know, there's definitely those amongst our fan group that are thinking that as well. And so why don't we take that and sort of jump into sort of some of the offense, the Georgia offense, and let's kind of start wide and zoom in, right? There was a point in time, you know, a year ago when I first started to think about this game. And at the time, there was the potential that Jake Fromm might come back and that he might be the quarterback. Over the summer into fall, Jamie Newman was going to be the guy and presumably was looking pretty good. For a minute, it was Dewan Mathis, and now it's Stetson Bennett. What sort of – there's almost an evolution of thought process. Walk us through that a little bit. Where do the Dogs kind of land on that evolution, devolution? I don't know. You guys talk to me about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, first off, if you're feeling good about your team, you'll talk yourself into anybody. And I think everyone's gone through a moment of, oh, wow, we're going to have Fromm back. Oh, who needs him? Newman's going to be awesome. Oh, Newman didn't want to play here. Mathis is going to be great. Oh, yeah, he's terrible. Bennett's perfect. That's what we wanted all along. Like, every team's going to talk themselves into that. I don't think there's any question, though, that the difference between the way that offense run when they took Mathis out and put in Bennett was pretty dramatic. What's interesting, though, is, you know, Georgia's offense was obviously incredibly disappointed last year. They brought in Monken and they clearly switched a lot of stuff around. Newman was supposed to be the driver of that. But it's interesting because at a certain level, after having all this notion that Kirby Smart's got to make difference with his offensive philosophy, man ball's not going to work anymore, we're trying to do this now, they've been more successful in the first three games by looking like, not, I wouldn't say man ball, but certainly closer, not the crazy inventive. Monken's throwing some wrinkles in there that I don't think we saw last year, but it's hardly a wild, it's not often built to score 48 points, I'll put it that way. And Bennett is competent, and he's been able to make the throws. It is also worth noting that every single quarterback that Kirby Smart has had since he's gotten here ended up in the NFL. I don't know if Stetson Bennett's going to end up in the NFL. And so whereas you guys looked at that game against Mississippi and said, oh my gosh, what is wrong with our defense? What is going on? Which is, I think, understandable. I think a lot of Georgia fans can look at that game, and obviously Georgia fans, will get to the defense, are very optimistic about their defense and feel good about it. But it's hard to imagine if this game turns into a shootout that's even close to the Mississippi game. Bennett is good. He's not a guy that's going to put up 48 points on you. And I think that's the concern, is it does feel, for all the talk of Kirby Smart changing things, Georgia's going to have to win this game the way that Georgia almost always wins its games, which is to say the Alabama way. And you know, I think that's what's most fascinating about this. Bennett is good, but, you know, this is a team, and I think having extra receivers that Jake Fromm did not have last year has made a big difference. But, you know, this is not a future pro at quarterback for Georgia right now.
Yeah, just as you were, you know, just as you were talking, you know, sort of the mindset that I have is, we see a lot of college teams, and you guys as well, right, where, you know, it's a future NFL lining up under center. And Stetson might look like an authentic college quarterback. We don't know about sort of what his future is. Doesn't mean he can't be good. Doesn't mean that he's not already good. You know, he's certainly playing well for you guys. Talk about the skill position players. It seems like, when you look at the roster on paper at the beginning of the season, you're getting the production that you need, but it's from different players. Zamir White is performing, but it seems, especially Saturday, a couple of the other guys, Kendall and Kenny, were more efficient. And then almost the same things with George Pickens and Kevis Jackson. You're getting the production, but maybe not from the players you were thinking you'd get it from. Is that something you hold as optimism, that those guys are going to get it right? Or is there something sort of inherent in the system or injury or whatever it may be that's sort of holding those guys back?
I think you're onto something, Dave, because last year the whole scuttlebutt around Georgia fans was that our receivers were young and inexperienced, and that was kind of an excuse making that we made for why Fromm threw for less than 50% in a lot of games last year. But, you know, sure, we have Pickens. He's the number one. and he's been double teamed. He's been squirting water at Jarrett Garantano when he came on the sidelines. He, you know, he's still kind of, you know, not really, hasn't really shown out. He had that nice grab against Auburn. But the cool thing for Georgia fans this year is the emergence of Kyrus Jackson. Is the emergence of multiple formations with tight ends that we're seeing, is the new jumbo package that they're running, and the stable of running backs, because you have Zamir White. He's your number one. James Cook's been banged up. But then Kenny McIntosh, who I think leads the nation in kick returns and has shown a lot of versatility in being able to kind of be that, you know, Henry Ruggs guy, you know, being able to return things and play on offense. And then you've got Kendall Milton, the true freshman five-star out of Fresno, California, who has the most impressive body lean so far in the first couple games. And, you know, it even goes deeper than there. We got Daiwan Edwards, another freshman. So I think you're right. We still don't really know what we have. It's kind of piecemealed together, at least from what we initially thought of at the beginning of the season. But, you know, I would think all Georgia fans right now are very bullish on the spreading the ball around. He threw to 9 different receivers last game. And I think that compared to this time last year, I'm a lot happier the position we're in this year than last year. Tony?
Yeah, and the one thing I would add to that, and it kind of bridges back to what Will just said, is that I don't believe we would have seen this kind of diversity out of the James Coley offense. True from through to a lot of guys, but we're seeing Bennett make throws to guys in all sorts of looks and patterns. I mean, we've run empty backfields. We've run, you know, we've run 12 personnel. We've run 22 personnel. You know, we've run 21 personnel. We've run 4 verts. We've run 4 verts with 2 tight ends as receivers. And, you know, probably the most impressive pass that Bennett made last week was essentially they flexed, I believe it was Milton, out over into the H-back slot. He just ran a seam route, and I mean, he hit him on the run, on a quick slant on the seam. And you know, here's a freshman running back who's acting as a slot receiver, you know, all 5'10" of him, and that is something, that sort of diversity of usage and thinking outside the box as far as, and that's, listen, I know y'all had Lane Kiffin. Am I allowed to say Lane Kiffin on this podcast? I'm just curious.
Well, there's probably a count, but go ahead.
I'll watch it. I mean, you had Lane Kiffin come in and modernize the offense at Alabama, and that paid off. This is a version of modernizing offense with Jeff Monken. Frankly, I think there's a reason Kirby went with Monken instead of someone else, in that Monken still wants to run the football a fair amount, and Georgia's going to look to do that. The good news from Georgia's perspective, and kind of what Pete Golding's got to think about, or Nick Saban has to think about, is Georgia's no longer just handing the ball off on draws or straight runs up the middle in the same rate or even in the same looks they were last year. And the thing, look, if I agree with Will, Georgia's going to win this game. It can't be a 63-48 shootout, because that's just a recipe for disaster for Georgia, which means Georgia's going to want to establish a running game. And, you know, I suspect when we talk to defense, we're going to say Najee Harris's name a lot. The good news for Georgia is we're not reliant on one back. And it's not that Alabama doesn't have 17 Najee Harris's in reserve. It's just that it feels like we really are spreading the ball around and giving multiple looks to multiple guys. And the offensive talent is there. It's really a matter of Monken figuring out how to best utilize and leverage them.
You know, I think ball distribution is certainly something Alabama struggled with last weekend. So what I'm hearing is we need to watch out for Kendall Milton. He's the one that's going to beat us over the head with the wheel routes and the tight ends. We probably envy your Darnell Washington. We went after him really heavy in recruiting, but looks like it may be the Trey McKitty transfer, right? That's catching the balls out of the tight end spot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have a Trey McKitty meow. It's kind of what we do here. that's the other thing about the Monken offense is we had an entire drive against both Arkansas and Auburn where we threw only to tight ends. I assume Coley threw his headset down and discussed. So, you know, that's I, I, I love our tight ends, and we have tight ends that can run block, they can pass block, and they catch passes. And that is, you're going to get a lot of snaps playing for Kirby Smart if you can do that as a tight end.
And probably a lot of balls thrown their way. I'll sort of joke on ourselves. Texas A&M and Ole Miss had a couple of drives that all they did was throw the ball to the tight end. Unfortunately, they were one or two play drives. That's a position we've struggled to cover. So definitely watch out for that. And then, like you said,
yeah, who was it? Yeboah for Ole Miss last week.
Yeah.
Yes. I assume he had an ice bath after all those some of those routes.
He was wide open on a lot of routes.
Yeah, I don't think he runs that much in practice, and and he's a transfer too. So something about these transfer tight ends.
Oh well, Ole Miss is going to be having to dive deep in transfers in junior college just to get their offense up. At least that's what I heard a couple of the announcers talking about on the game last week.
Yeah, they're you know, until Kiff's able to sort of get the recruiting machine up and running there, and you know, we'll see what that is. But yeah, I think he'll lean heavily into the JUCO system to fill gaps, you know, points of needs. He has a couple of a couple of defenders that he brought in with a whole COVID situation. He brought in from Canada, and so they're still ramping up. It's almost like an NFL model where they're just trying to get players wherever they can, to come in and play. And certainly Yeboah, you think of a Temple of all places, but you know, he had quite a day on Saturday.
They keep running the field in meters. It's very confusing.
Wait, we don't. It's third down. Should we punt?
Exactly. Hey, talk about offensive line. How's that coming together? I think there's four starters that are new this year. You got guys had a couple guys drafted early into the NFL. So we talk about the center and some of the issues that you guys have had there with the snapping. But just in general, how's the line coming together? What are the thoughts, concerns across the offensive front?
Snaps have been an issue. But, yes, go ahead.
No, I was just – I mean, who knows? I mean, that's the honest answer. They looked bad, and then they looked good in the Arkansas game. They looked good all of Auburn. They looked most of the game against Tennessee. We can't give Alabama gift points like we did Tennessee and expect to do anything other than to spend our post-game podcast going like, well, that was something, wasn't it? I can't believe I stayed up this late for that.
Yeah, the only difference is that it didn't rain the whole time.
It didn't rain the whole time. Thank goodness it didn't rain. I think one of the things that is still a learning process for this offensive line is Matt Luke likes to shift guys around in a way that Sam Pittman didn't. And I think there are guys still struggling with that a little bit. It also, I will also say, he has seemed to be able to find a combination. It's a different combination each game of guys that work. But it starts and ends with Trey Hill. I mean, there's the reason he's playing. He's their best blocker. He's the one that, I don't know if you watched much of the Georgia game, but he's the one that hustled 15 yards downfield that got the unintentional hook and ladder play off the fumble on the receiver. I remember who it was. Was it Jackson?
It might have been Kyrus Jackson.
And Jackson maybe fumbled the ball as he's getting tackled and it ball popped right into Trey Hill.
Trey Hill's just right there.
And that's, I mean, that's an incredible hustle from a big dude who was pass blocking literally 2 seconds before then. I mean, he was going downfield to help this guy. That's the reason he's in there snapping, despite the fact that he is he's snapping balls that will go over DeJuan Mathis's head, much less Stetson Bennett's.
Hey, I want to go off script a little bit. You mentioned Sam Pittman. Obviously, Arkansas played you guys really close. No one picked Arkansas to do anything this year, and they're really playing competitive. What's the inside skinny on Sam?
I think his players love him to death and would like literally walk through fire for him. And after, I mean, you're going to appreciate this. After dealing with Chad Morris's ass for a couple of years, I mean, I think those guys are just happy.
How about that?
I mean, I hope Chad Morris stays at Auburn as long as Gus Malzahn does, honestly. I'm fine with
that's
that.
A long time, right?
Yeah, well, I hope they look. As long as Gus gets a lifetime contract, I think we're all happy.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
How about that? I'll buy that. Well, hey, this flipped the field, and man, you guys are killing it on defense. Ranked number one. Talk to me about, and so I may have been misguided, going into the Tennessee game, obviously expected you guys to win. I didn't think that was so much in question. But I'd watched a little bit of the prior game. The Tennessee offensive line really looked like it was coming together. They've got Brandon, last name escapes me, at center, transfer from Alabama. He's a six-year senior, and I think the rest of the guys are five stars. And they look big. They look athletic. They look like in sort of an old Tennessee offensive line. And so I thought they would. I thought that would give you a little bit of pause. It didn't seem to. The Georgia defense, the Georgia front seven, seemed to do work all day. Talk to me about this front seven. Who are some of the names, the players, the schemes that we need to Alabama fans need to watch out for?
I mean, it goes about 18 players deep, 19 players deep. It's finally they've gotten the depth, especially in the linebacker position, where Adam Anderson, who's a five-star, might not even start. You know, and he had a hell of a game last week. You know, one of the interesting things, and you'll see it every game, they're going to do it versus Alabama in the first two drives. They do this lateral shift where they shift the gaps. And I think we've gotten a false start in every game because of that. And, you know, it's not like he just discovered something new with defensive scheming. But, you know, that along with the push they're getting from guys like Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt, you know, I think one thing you could say is the guys have grown up a little bit. You know, you got Richard LeCount, who will be probably a first-round, second-round draft pick, who came back for his senior year. And you have his understudy, Lewis Seen, who's just literally leveling guys, taking their helmets off in the correct way of hitting it. He, you know, no targeting. Last week, he had a hit like that. But and then you've got guys that have played against Alabama before, like Monty Rice, who had the strip sack, fumble recovery, touchdown, that he made it look effortless last week. And then you got a bunch of lockdown corners like Tyson Campbell on one side and Eric Stokes on the other. And then finally, the one man, if I had to give a defensive MVP so far, it would be Azeez Ojulari, who had two sacks last week early to set the tone. And really, they just keep coming at you. It's unlike – this is new to us. You know, we've seen good defenses. We've had Roquan Smith, and we've seen it before. But I think some ink has been spilled this week about the maturation process of this defense, and it's finally coming into what Kirby has, I guess, been envisioning ever since he got here.
Yep. Yeah, and you throw in Jordan Davis and Julian Rochester to kind of make the center of that a defense go – you know, you got a guy like Julian Rochester who probably would start at any defense other than Alabama's, or maybe Clemson's. I don't know. And then you get Wine, Trayvon Walker out on the ends, playing D tackles. I mean, like Walker and Wyatt both have the speed to play defensive end, and they put their hand down. I'll be honest. I was with you. I was worried about what the defensive offensive line would do against, or how well they would play against our defensive line, and was pleasantly surprised that we made an offensive line who on paper should have gotten better with the addition of Cade Mays look pretty not competent through large portions of the game.
I would say the best way to put this is the key thing is the depth is what Scott's talking about. There's a certain kind of old Nolan Richardson Arkansas-esque 40 minutes of hell sort of idea going on, and that they sub, like obviously every defense subs, but the way that they are, I think part of the relentlessness, you know, the best defense that that Georgia's had in a long time was, of course, the 17 team with Roquan and everyone. But that team felt like more star-oriented. They were good everywhere, but they had like clear studs and stars. Kind of everyone's a stud, and they're constantly coming in. To me, you know, that's what's fun about this. This is what they talked about when Kirby would stack and stack and stack, just like Saban's been doing for years. This is the result of that, and that not only are there great players, but they're everywhere, and they're not just too deep. They're all getting in. They're all, and I think that's become a really big part of it.
So, I mean, you're pulling me off script again. How was Oliver Miller? Why was he always so fat?
Yeah, I feel like he was more. Yeah, he's kind of the way that the way that Iowa used to have 3-on-3 girls basketball, and there was always someone that just stopped at half court, and then would just cut back on defense. I think that's what Oliver Miller was doing back right. Then. He didn't have to go all the way across.
Hey, you bring up Nolan. I have flashbacks. I was in school at Alabama when he was at Arkansas, and in the West, anyways, those are really two big rivals, Oliver Miller, Todd Day, I can't remember that.
Yeah. Corliss. Remember Corliss Williamson? Corliss Williamson was my favorite. He was in shape. That man was not. Yeah. There was no Oliver Miller. That guy was in perfect shape.
He was also playing 38 minutes on D for Nolan Richardson, so he had to.
Right, right. Hey, you mentioned corners a little bit, and I think that's going to be sort of a game within the game. I think that's going to be a critical matchup. I mean, I love your front seven. I love your safeties. I don't know your corners as well, and I know that we're going to go after them with Waddle and Mechie and Smitty. Talk to me about your corners, and if you think we're going to see a lot of one-on-one matchup there, are we going to see some bracket coverage? What's your thought there, are they poised to stand up to that kind of challenge?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I certainly – like you're going to see Stokes and Campbell with some DJ Daniel spelling them. Stokes and Campbell are both – potential lockdown corners. Stokes is probably a little more developed than Campbell. I mean, you know, Stokes is who is going to be probably facing your one guy on the left. But I can't really say because Lanning has mixed up the defensive looks enough. I mean, I certainly think that we will probably try to play man coverage and let. Georgia's defense works better if they can get away with playing man coverage on the corners and letting LeCount kind of play true free safety and go that way. I'll be honest, I think the crux of the matter really does involve how well we can, if we can play man-to-man, even on one of those guys, and force Mac Jones to go to the second or third read. It's a great test for our corners. I mean, it's a great test for this defense. And frankly, when you look at what Mac Jones has been able to do, frankly, he's starting to look like Joe Burrow's like to me. Yeah. And, you know, that was a battle we lost last year, but I think they also learned some from that. And it's going to be, I think the game probably is going to be won or lost there, how well our corners play against the receivers.
Yeah, yeah, and the week before we played Auburn, I was terrified of Seth Williams. I wasn't sure. I mean, I had just seen what he had done to Kentucky the week before, high-pointing those two touchdown passes, you know, like, get off me. And Stokes and Campbell pretty much shut him out. I mean, I think he had three meaningless catches in the game and really was never a factor. So that gives me a lot of confidence. You know, Tennessee didn't really throw many, you know, top-tier wide outs, and they don't have a quarterback that can – they can get him a ball. Now, he did throw two touchdown passes, but one came off a silly fourth and one play where Kirby went on, I think it was on our own 38, and they, you know, what do you do? It's almost like a turnover, immediately go deep. The Palmer made a great play, and then the second one, Garantano dropped a dime. Yeah. So I think those are available for Mac Jones because I watched him against Ole Miss, and I think he started the game 11 of 11 or 12 of 12. Before he had an incompletion. So, I mean, that scares me a lot.
Yeah, I do think that this is going to be sort of one of the critical matchups of the game. I think that if Georgia is able to consistently cover the two wides one-on-one, you know, there's an efficiency there, right? Because you guys are investing, you know, two corners, but you're taking away a component of our offense, right? And so there's value if you guys are able to deliver one-on-one coverage. I think that's really going to be a challenge for all the players involved, and that's going to be interesting. If you have to start pulling safeties back, if you have to start playing nickels and dimes more often to cover the receivers, and, you know, it's math, right? If you pull, it's an accordion, right? If you pull into the secondary, it softens up the box. And so I think that's going to be something that Alabama will come out early and challenge that. And I think how that goes, you know, the first couple of series might dictate, you know, some of how the rest of the game goes. One more question. I'll get you guys out of here on this. So Scott Cochran, and so maybe on the field, maybe off the field, just want to understand like what's going on in the mentals of the Georgia fans, bringing in Scott Cochran. We know that he's an asset for any program, right? His relationship with the players, he's an on the field coach, you know, his ability to recruit, now he's got energy for days. But Georgia's not a starter school, and so for him to get his first on-the-field coaching job at Georgia feels like an incrementally large, substantially large sort of step up. So what, and again, you might feel differently today than you did, you know, back over the summer or spring, but what sort of the thought process Georgia fans have for Cochran?
Well, I'll confess, when it was announced that Cochran was coming to Georgia, the general reaction was, take that, Alabama. Like, in all honesty, like, I can't make it any more clear than that. Like, the notion that, like, oh, wow, we're going to have this awesome strength. Like, they got good strength guys here. Like, from the perception, certainly from the more lizard-brained aspect of the fan base, was socking it to – socking it to Alabama. It was a mental win and so on. Now, mental wins, stuff like that, like, it definitely felt like a message board victory would probably be the best way to put it. Generally speaking, those tend to – I don't know about you, how you generally works in Alabama sports. Message boards don't actually win a lot of football games, but it felt cool. It felt like, all right, we got him there. But I think there was a lot of skepticism.
Don't tell them that.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is that, like, there's still, like, a little bit of skepticism. Like, you're right, this is a pretty big job to, like, suddenly have as your first actual coaching job. And special teams, Georgia fans have a long history with special teams fiascos. It's been great the last couple of years. Rodrigo was so wonderful, but certainly it's something that they were worried about. Is I cannot speak for my two colleagues here with me, but I feel like the special teams has been terrific so far, you know, and that is, and I don't know how much you can attribute directly to Cochran, but clearly, I mean, that of all the things to worry about with Georgia, the special teams has been down this year. Again, I don't know if that's Cochran or not, but so far, if there has not been that, why did we make a big deal out of bringing this guy and giving him this first job and putting him in charge of the special teams? There's been nothing like that at all. It's really been aces from the special team so far.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll add really comes from the setup. The question is, first off, you know, obviously, you know, this Kirby and Scott have been friends for a long time. Kirby really wanted him to come with him before, and he had an on-field coaching spot. If you're going to give an on-field coaching spot to a former strength coach because you want his recruiting prowess and you want him, you know, on the sideline and during practice and interacting with players directly, I mean, special teams coordinator is probably the place to do it because Kirby's been very important. Like, actually, special teams is a full whole team coaching effort. We work on this as a team. But, you know, I'm probably different than most Georgia fans. I was, on one hand, I was happy that, you know, we got the guy that made the Black Roses comment on our side, because that still stinks. But on the other hand, you know, through three games, his units have acquitted themselves rather nicely. And if it keeps up, I don't think in a year, we keep averaging 34 yards of return on kickoffs and returning, every punt we return being 15 yards. We continue to punt the ball inside the 20, and our kicker wins the Ray Guy Award, which he's probably on pace to do. And our freshman kicker keeps booming 53 yarders and putting kickoffs from the 20 in the end zone. I don't think anybody's going to ask that question next year.
Yeah, when he was hired, we dedicated an entire podcast to him. That's how excited we were. Now, we talked about other things, but that was the title of the podcast. Was Scott Cochran was in the title. But yeah, I mean, Zamir White, our starting running back, blocked a punt against Arkansas. It's just crazy. And like Tony said, you got Camarda, who really is coming to his own, and the schemes that they've been coming up with on kick returns. I mean, Kenny McIntosh was just a general backup running back last year, and he showed out in the Arkansas game with his returns and his flashes of brilliance. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot to be said about having him over here, and like what Will said, he couldn't have said any better. The fact that Alabama doesn't have him anymore, and he's performing so well, I think it's a win-win.
The one thing I'll add to that is, I think in a weird way, Cochran grounds Kirby a little bit and helps him not overthink. I mean, one of the things that I think, frankly, we saw in the 16 season, a little bit in the 17 actually, was Kirby had typical first coach itis, right? He would make decisions. And one of the complaints I had about him over the past couple of years is, particularly end of half situations, not necessarily really down in distance and not managing the clock as much as down in distance and kind of thinking through how you script those out. And I Kirby had gotten better at that, but it also feels like that Georgia's playing less frantic at times. And as strange as it is to say that, I want to give Scott Cochran some of that credit because I think he just grounds Kirby in a way. It's hard to say somebody that's like almost human cocaine would do that, but it feels that way.
I've had several friends in my life who I would actually classify as human cocaine. But
yes, you have.
If we're counting this, and I listened to what is it, your post game show earlier, late last week, whenever it was, is this two shows in a row with cocaine references? Is there something we need to know about?
If it's only two, I'm very proud of us.
Yeah. I got to be honest, pretty much every show. yeah. Although, if we're talking Lane Kiffin, we're going to talk about cocaine.
Yeah. We're in SEC football. I lived in New York City for 13 years and then moved down where the SEC coaches around. I'm well versed in the particulars here.
Very nice. I think you make a compelling point about Cochran sort of grounding Kirby. From an Alabama perspective, there were a couple of those games. I read just an incredible stat that I'm not rubbing it in, guys. The two games, two of our more recent wins, you guys led like 18 minutes and 39 seconds, some insane stat, and we won, whatever happened to right. But I think there was a moment in each of those games where Kirby made a decision on a fake punt or going for it or whatever the specific situation was that maybe he shouldn't have made. And I don't know if that's the dot you're connecting, but that's the dot I'm connecting that maybe a Cochran would have said, no, dude, we're not doing that. And they 100%. Have that relationship that he could have said it just that way. Like, no, dude, we're not doing that.
100%.
And listen, that is the thing that Kirby Smart hasn't proven yet, right? Like, for all the success that he's had and all the things that he's done. And listen, he has a very good answer to this question when people are like, I don't know how good of an in-game coach are you? He's like, well, I win 90% of my games. I feel like I'm a pretty good in-game coach. Right. But the question remains, right? Like, particularly in those Alabama games, there have been big blinking, wait, what are you doing here? And listen, those things get a brighter light on them when you have not won a championship. Speaking of fake punts, I still don't know what Saban was thinking in that fake punt in the Clemson National Championship game. I think we're all confused. Like, but Saban doesn't have to hear that all the time because he's Nick Saban and he's won a bunch of championships. Until, like, this is the whole Kirby Smart thing here. Until he wins one, every mistake that he makes that keeps him from winning one is amplified. And I think those were clear mistakes, but coaches make mistakes all the time. It's just that they're really amplified on him because he was brought here to win the championship. He's come really close to beating Alabama and getting over the top each of those times. He's made a mistake each time that cost him. And so those come back and to haunt him in a way they might not. But I don't know, maybe not. Maybe you guys are constantly yelling at Saban for that fake pun. If you are, you shouldn't. Nick Saban is a really good coach and you should be and totally give him a break on that. But I doubt you are.
No, we're not not yelling about that one. It rotates right, and this week we're it's a Fire Pete Golden is sort of the champion. So we'll see how that plays out. I think there was a rumor yesterday. Someone started that Charlie Strong was gonna. We actually had him as an analyst, and that he was gonna. I don't think that's gonna happen. Someone would have, even for him to call the plays, he's an analyst, so he would have, someone would have to be taken off the field. And I don't think that happens. I don't think that's gonna change. So we'll see how that goes. Hey guys, this has been a blast. This has been a whole lot of fun. If we do match up, I don't know when's the SEC championship game later in December. If we end up matching up again, we have to get together and do this again, right?
Yeah, definitely, Dave.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right. Hey fellas, you have a great evening. I love the setup on the patio with the bourbon and the dogs and the crickets and the Braves game.
Yeah, you can hear the dogs barking. That's right.
It's actually our 5-star reviews have gone up once we started getting the cricket noises somehow. So
the irony is we're all in a very tightly roomed broom closet. This is all just ambient noise. We play with our sound machine to make it look like we're COVID compliant when we're not.
Right.
Fantastic. There you go. Hey, whatever works. All right, fellas, you have a great evening. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Dave.
Right. Good luck, guys.
All right. Is that good?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Thanks, really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. That was fun.
Tony, at least show your face and wave to Dave. Will introduce
himself. I came by.
Yeah.
I'm glad you started pointing.
Dave, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm glad you started pointing at sort of directing traffic because...
Yeah, I'm pretty much, that's what I'm doing during the, he's glad I was pointing and directing traffic.
We just like talking. I mean, just me and Will going blah, blah, blah. We're like Jenna Maroney and Tracy Morgan.
Man. Yeah. I think we finally just started recording these last week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, good luck. And if we do meet again, then love to do it again.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
See you, Dave.